Welcome to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio, airing live on unceded Coast Salish territories in Canada. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only animal advocacy radio program, bringing you all you need to keep you up to date with what's happening locally and abroad, from interviews with amazing change makers around the world to news, events, and lifestyle. Animal Voices can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and can also be streamed at coopradio.org, or you can check out animalvoices.org for podcasts soon after airing. So the UN General Assembly proclaimed December 10th as Human Rights Day in 1950 to bring to the attention of the peoples of the world the Universal Declaration of Human Rights as the common standard of achievement for all peoples in all nations. The United Nations General Assembly created the mandate of High Commissioner for the Promotion and Protection of All Human Rights in December 1993. But have we really achieved this goal? When unarmed black youth are being murdered by white cops, and the cops are not only released of any blame, but also, you know, receive a fair amount of support. When trans and queer people are still routinely beaten and killed just for being who they are. And when their deaths are celebrated by certain Christian fundamentalists. And when systemic sexism, colonialism, and racism still impacts so much of our daily lives. Today's show will be in respect of International Human Rights Day, and we'll start a bit by discussing how human rights has affected animal rights and our desire to fight for animal liberation, as well as go into discussion about how some oppression, discrimination that takes place within the animal rights movement and how we challenge that. Later in the show, Lauren Anelis of Food Empowerment Project will be joining us to speak about the suffering and disregard of human rights that takes place in slaughterhouses and animal agriculture facilities. As animal activists, we make ourselves well aware of the suffering that is inflicted on animals within these systems, but we often fail to recognize that this is a multi-layered system of oppression, hurting all those at the bottom. This includes, of course, the workers who are the ones causing the direct harm to the animals that we see in videos, but they are also oppressed and victimized by the system. And this is something that is especially important to recognize when viewing undercover footage of animal agriculture facilities and slaughterhouses. I'm looking forward to speaking with Lauren about these important issues. So stay tuned.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk. This is Allison, by the way. Hi. Hi. Hi, Cynthia. Hi, Darren. And hi, Amir.
Hi.
And welcome back, Cynthia, by the way. You've been away for a really long time.
Yeah, I think like 5 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited.
And you're back for one day, and then you're gone again. Yeah. So, and nice to have you back too, Darren. So, yes, I wanted to talk about for our Human Rights Day show about an organization that we have featured on the show before, and they are called A Well-Fed World. So if you're interested in hearing the interview that we did with them 2 years ago on the Human Rights Day show, you can check that out on our website, animalvoices.org. It was December 7th, 2012. They are an educational nonprofit organization that recognizes that all people should have enough food and the right kinds of food. They are a hunger relief and animal protection organization, and they chip away at two of the world's most immense, unnecessary, and unconscionable forms of suffering. That is the suffering of people from lack of food and the suffering of animals used as food. Of course, each of these two issues directly affect each other, which once again shows us that animal rights are human rights and vice versa. I actually have just a little offshoot here on my license plate on my car. I don't know if you have noticed. It says on the top, human liberation and then animal liberation. And I really believe that the two are really interconnected, which is why it's important to recognize that, like on days like today when we're doing a special show for that. Mm. Yeah, so A Well-Fed World, they recognize that industrial meat production is rising at an alarming rate, and decision makers and opinion leaders have historically focused on technological fixes to increase food supply and population control to reduce food demand rather than to try to reduce global meat consumption. Now, can you imagine how more efficient it would be, for example, if we fed the grain that is fed to food animals to just human animals instead, right? I'm always just so amazed at that you know, there's the middleman being that it's the animals, and people don't think about that. Like, why is that?
I think people still don't realize that you can have a well-balanced diet from just eating plant foods. So I think that some people think if you grow food that's just plant-based, that there might not be enough protein. It's just a cultural misconception. I think that we can actually survive and thrive on just a plant-based diet.
So it's still stemming from that very basic belief of where do you get your protein to not having enough people being fed food in the world, and the fact that we have hungry people in this world where we have enough food that is available. It's just not going to the right places. It's being fed to animals first. So obviously cycling crops through animals to produce meat and other animal source foods is inefficient. It's detrimental to food security and climate change efforts. So I just wanted to briefly mention about the different ways that a well-fed world works to try to remedy this situation. First of all, they promote the benefits of sustainable animal-free solutions in response to global food security, health, hunger, and environmental concerns. They encourage think tanks, social justice leaders, and global decision makers to promote the benefits and accessibility of plant-based foods in their policies and recommendations. They provide resources and educational materials to the general public to improve food choices, especially in high-income countries and privileged communities where there is access to alternatives. And they empower locally active groups with financial and material assistance, especially groups in low-income and otherwise disenfranchised communities. So just to close here, I just wanted to really focus on the fact that this organization strives to help both humans and animals. They don't forget the animal part of the equation when they're looking at hunger relief in places that need it. So please do check out their website. It's awfw.org for lots of info and resources about the work they do and to become informed about the issues regarding world hunger and animal food production. And also, yeah, check out our interview with Dawn Moncrieff. She's the executive director from A Well-Fed World. You can look her up on her website at animalvoices.org.
And I also wanted to mention, too, A Well-Fed World does help with funding of various, you know, grassroots mm-hmm. social justice and animal liberation, animal rights groups throughout the world. So it's always great to support these type of organizations. So as we mentioned earlier, as many, or at least some, animal liberation activists know, the struggle for human rights and animal liberation are so interconnected in many ways. The main connection is based on the idea that because someone is different, they are not worthy of our compassion, and therefore their suffering is justified. This is the statement that can describe pretty much any form of discrimination and oppression, but hate takes it one step further. Not only are the different from mainstream, as you know, we like to categorize people and animals, are not worthy of compassion, but they also are seen as disgusting, unfeeling, unthoughtful, and therefore deserving of as much pain and suffering as possible. This can be particularly evident when we look at how our language has shaped the way people have been, and in many cases still are referred to. The term animal is used against people as a way to diminish them to the level of an animal, which is seen as a negative thing, regardless of the fact that we are all animals, biologically. They're just like animals. That term is often used to describe, or has been at least used to describe, people of color, queer people, women, people of varying religious and cultural backgrounds, and so on. Why is being an animal such a horrible insult, and why is an animal seen as someone so disgusting and not deserving of concern that we push other marginalized groups down with them? We're about to discuss some of that. Cynthia, you had some things to share on some recent stuff that's been, you know, shared throughout social media.
Yeah, so recently the Gaddami Festival was shared with a lot of animal rights groups and just people in general, I think, and it's an event that happens in India Nepal every 5 years, and it's a horrific event where basically 200,000 animals are slaughtered in a sacrificial slaughter for a religious group. And of course, as an animal rights activist, I think that is horrible. However, I feel the way it has been portrayed, especially in the animal rights media world, has been pretty problematic. The main article that was shared, the people were referred to as barbaric, which I think is a problematic word in and of itself. In other words, when I looked at the comment section, people were saying that they're primitive, backwards. There was a lot of like racist words used. And also the story that was shared was about two white activists going to kind of help stop this Gaddami festival and not really focusing on the many groups in India that have been working for many years to stop this festival, to educate the people that are doing the slaughter. And I think that oftentimes the animal rights world has a very privileged perspective on things, and they don't actually look at the whole picture of what's happening. They just kind of look at Western media sources. And as a person of color in the animal rights movement, and as actually my family is Hindu, I find that it can be difficult being in this very white movement, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I think just to add to that, it's important to recognize that the words like, you know, barbaric and savage and uncivilized has been part of the discourse historically used to justify colonization. So the idea is that European countries sort of justify their, privileging of or pillaging of other countries with this idea that they're actually going in there to do something better, to, you know, develop their countries and bring them to the same kind of like living standards and level of like society, which is like a very kind of arrogant way to justify their own violence against like people from other parts of the world. So.
And just to clarify, too, these animals—they were buffalo, right?
Yeah.
They're killed to use them in basically the animal product trade of using their skins and bones, correct?
Yeah. There are actually different types of animals. Yeah. They use rats and pigeons, and buffalo are the main.
Okay.
But basically, the buffalo skins are used. So I found a lot of people saying, oh, well, they just kind of waste these animals.
No, but it's actually they're killing them to use for that industry.
Yeah, they do.
But hey, don't we do that here on a much larger scale in North America?
And exactly. And that's
and
the thing, too.
Too.
Yeah, we kill billions of animals every year. And I find there was a lot of comments, you know, saying that this is completely barbaric. And
I mean, we
see slaughterhouse videos come out all the time, and we also have, you know, animals are not killed in some sort of happy way where they're hugged to death. So I don't understand.
And the fact is that we're starting to see the slaughterhouse videos come out. It hasn't been really up until recently in recent years. So people will start to maybe become more educated on that and make that switch in their head, realizing that it's all the same.
And we're going to talk more about slaughterhouse, industry soon. I also think it's really important that we kind of, rather than, you know, pointing the blame on someone else's culture, someone else's country, that we look on ourselves, because we are causing, like, arguably the most amount of suffering, regardless. And yes, suffering happens in different ways. It happens in different, you know, contexts, but it's like what makes one more justified than the other, rather than, you know, it's your own country. I don't know. Yeah. All right. And I was also just going to kind of share a little bit of a more personal story. I guess just, you know, touching on, you know, using insults or using words to kind of like diminish someone. As a kid, I really recall like words such as dyke, fruit, queer, gay, fag, just being kind of a default insult that kids would use for each other. Mm-hmm. And I also got called these things from time to time. And even before knowing what these words meant, I knew it was, you know, something I really didn't want to be. So then years later, when I realized that I was, in fact, queer, self-hatred kicked in. I started to shut people out, isolate myself, and just not wanting anyone to know kind of who I was for fear of rejection. When I finally, you know, did come out, some things got a bit easier. Like, sure, not everyone was fully accepting, but I was able to realize those who did were the ones that mattered. And there's still some times where, like, I would be out in public kissing another woman or something, and people would yell at you, stupid dykes, or, like, yeah, just, there are children here, can you do that somewhere else? That kind of stuff, when it's, like, okay, but it's fine for heterosexual couples to do this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, you know, we were engaging in sexual acts, kissing or holding hands, like, it's just ridiculous. And then that, you know, that kind of leads into the fact that, you know, women in our society do face a lot of harassment in many ways. Street harassment is a huge one, and I find that happens. I can't speak to everyone's experiences, but I find that when I'm being affectionate to with another woman or walking in public holding hands with another woman, the street harassment is almost doubled, with males often saying things like, can I join? And just constantly like pushing on that regardless of how many rejections they're given. And so, yeah, it's interesting that that happens. It's, you know, it's degrading, it's objectifying and threatening. It's never a compliment to street harass somebody. Just a shout out to all the men listening. I just wanted to touch on that and how, you know, this also kind of ties into the fact that, you know, there's a lot of sexism within animal rights as well, and a lot of heterosexism that we see, primarily not to call out any particular groups, but PETA has used a lot of sexism in their campaigns. As well as other groups and just individuals as well, with the way that they speak about it. They speak about veganism as a way to lose weight, more aiming at women, like it's a diet. Just a lot of campaigning in, you know, in sexy ways, you know, bikini lettuce girls and a lot of fat shaming as well in the movement, I've noticed. That kind of goes into a lot of issues, but... and I also wanted to give a shout out for the recently founded Vegan Feminist Action Collective, is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you can look them up on Facebook. They're working to actively challenge these notions, these sexist notions. And
And the Facebook group is Sister Species Solidarity.
That's another one. Yeah, that's for the zine.
It's just based in Vancouver, right? Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. I also wanted to kind of share something... We have time. Yeah, I'll just briefly share a blog post that was written by someone from Direct Action Everywhere, and it's called A Queer Vegan's Deja Vu. So I'll just read a bit of it. As a vegan, it's tempting to throw in the towel in an argument when a meat eater declares, but meat tastes so good. It's as close to an admission of defeat as you can get, and the only remotely coherent reason for eating meat. Selfish, yes. Unjust, yes, but at least they're being honest. I've long since considered this the end of the argument, the point at which I give up and let the cognitive dissonance do its work. No longer. 2 days ago, I was eating dinner with a friend when the discussion turned to a video we had both seen of a young lamb skipping down the hall. It's so cute, he said, but lamb tastes so good. It had never happened before, but at that moment, I had a deja vu. Not of the many times I'd heard that excuse in the past, but of a similar phrase I heard from my dad as a middle schooler on the verge of questioning my sexuality. Gays are disgusting. I remember the day we drove to school and I'd mentioned that my progressive high school was celebrating Gay Pride Day. I made a comment about how each color on the rainbow flag had a meaning. My dad offered his, "Red is the color of your ass after you've been reamed by a faggot." I remember the time my friend proposed that we pretend the character we were trying to kill in a video game was his soccer team's gay coach. I joined in, shouting every epithet I knew at the TV screen while we thwacked him. Behind these expressions was nothing more or less than raw, visceral emotion, disgust, privileged over justice. As a white, economically privileged and abled male, I had a life pretty much set up for me, yet the visceral anti-gay hatred I heard growing up condemned me to spending 8 years of my life in a grim depression. My dad has since changed dramatically, showing the power of human transformation. It's difficult to imagine anybody changing more powerfully for the better and being a more loving father, yet every decision I made, from my major to my friends to my decision to quit dance, was based on the desire not to be disgusting. With this casual turn of phrase, but meat tastes so good, my friends, family, and loved ones condemn countless individuals to a life filled with torture that is far worse. Flesh eaters say this with the same tone of my voice my dad used when he said, "Gays are disgusting." So that's just kind of, that's a brief quote or a brief part of this this article blog post, and this was by an anonymous person, so I can't give them individualized credit, but I found it very powerful to kind of paint the picture of how our language is so interconnected. Darren, did you have anything else to share on the topic?
I kind of just want to generally talk about the fact that a lot of times, you know, the vegan community, animal rights, animal liberation people, we have this kind of missionary tendency where we think our goal is to kind of go out there and convert people. And it kind of, you know, it's kind of like similar to the international dynamics, right? Like, we're really quick to try and change other countries' behaviors and then criticize other countries before we kind of look within our own communities, how it is that the animal rights and animal liberation communities are not just excluding people that would potentially want to join, but we're excluding those people who already do care about animals, but like a lot of times feel just really left out because of internal like racism, sexism, and classism within our own movement. And so I just think it's really encouraging to see like the Vegan Feminist Action Collective and what's that?
The Queer Animal Collective,
which we will talk about a bit more later, to just kind of start popping up and offering more critical perspectives on animal liberation and creating more space for people who are traditionally more marginalized within the movement itself. Yeah.
I think Amir had something quick to share too.
Yeah, just a quick note on what everything, or what all of you were talking about, is this aspect of intersectionality. And I think our perception of animal rights and that sort of thing won't change until our perception of how, yeah, human rights have been challenged over the past. And one thing I noticed a little while ago, actually, Alex Hirschhaft, who was a co-founder of the U.S. Animal Rights Movement, did a Reddit Q&A session a little while ago. And if you didn't know, that he's also a Holocaust survivor, and he was actually comparing these two things, the animal rights movement and the Holocaust. And I think if it's coming from someone that's been through it, it's not as controversial. And this was actually a quote from him, and he says, "The negative reaction is largely due to people's mistaken perception that the comparison values their lives equally with those of pigs and cows. Nothing could be farther from the truth. What we are doing is pointing out to the commonality and pervasiveness of the oppressive mindset, which enables human beings to perpetrate unspeakable atrocities on other living beings, whether they be Jews, Bosnians, Muslims, or animals. It's a mindset that allowed German and Polish neighbors of extermination camps to go on with their lives, just as we continue to subsidize the oppression of animals at the supermarket checkout counter." So I think he made a great point there and opened up a lot of people's eyes, actually, with that Q&A.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for sharing, Amir. That was great. And I think that leads us into our events.
Yeah, on that note, some events coming up. Liberation BC will be handing out leaflets this Sunday, December the 7th, at the Santa Parade in downtown. They'll be handing out copies of Talking Turkey. It has information about the turkey industry, including housing, breeding, transport, and slaughter. So get out there and show your support. Everyone seems to love Portland, right, guys? I'm sure most of you do. We talk about it a lot on the show. The good thing with Portland being so close is it's never too short notice to get there, especially for a bake sale. Yep, there is a bake sale happening tomorrow at Food Fight Grocery Store from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. If you'd like to contribute with a donation or more, please email info@resistanceecology.org. If you are a vegan looking for something to do for the upcoming holidays, or not a vegan just wanting to support the animal rights movement, Gray's Restaurant on Fraser Street will be holding a holiday feast on December the 23rd. It will run from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m., and I'm sure they'll have all sorts of Christmas-themed vegan surprises in store. This will be especially nice for those of you out there who don't want to be around a poor dead turkey at their family celebration. Visit Gray's Facebook page for more info. And early bird tickets are on sale for the vegan prom.
Woohoo!
Yeah. They're available now till December the 31st, and this would make a great stocking stuffer, actually, for that special someone. Vegan prom takes place February the 28th from 8 to 1 a.m. Do you guys have your dates yet?
I guess I have my date.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
What about you, Darren?
I don't. I'm forever alone.
I don't really have a date either. Sweet,
yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay.
Darren, I can always take more than one date. Yeah. Sorry, before going into this interview, I just wanted to mention, too, we briefly spoke about the Vegan Feminist Action Collective and the Queer Animal Collective, and I just wanted to do a shout-out that hopefully our listeners, you know, would be, if these are issues that you care about as well, would feel empowered to join these groups. The Queer Animal Collective is actually having our first action planning meeting coming up on December 12th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Heartwood Cafe. And you're welcome to join the group online to RSVP. The group is Queer Animal Collective, and that's collective QLLECTIVE. And also the Vegan Feminist Action Collective is working on their next zine. Their first one, Sister Species Solidarity, just came out. And the next one is on the theme of bodily autonomy. So anything related to that, it can be very, it's a very wide topic. I think it will cover issues of sexuality, sexual autonomy, you know, freedom to not be exploited and to have reproductive rights and those kind of things. So, yeah, it would be great if you have any submissions about that and how it relates to animals or human animals as well. Please contact them.
Every weekday from 7 to 8 a.m., Media Mornings brings you independent news and culture you won't hear anywhere else.
Daily headlines, interviews, countless local voices, and our Latin America report help you make sense of today's news from Coast Salish territories to global affairs.
Guests include David Suzuki.
Media become hostages of the corporate agenda, and thank God for the independents like you.
Indigenous activists like Pam Palmater.
This kind of radio show helps inform Indigenous and non-Indigenous people and hopefully inspire our Indigenous citizens to take action.
Social justice advocates like Maude Barlow.
We are continue to be America's gas tank, although now we want to be the gas tank for the world.
Artists like Kenny Starr.
Change is created by lots of different types of activists.
Ray Spoon.
Gender is limiting and affecting everyone.
And authors like Michael Parenti.
The state is at the service of these corporations.
So tune in to Media Mornings weekdays 7 to 8 a.m.
on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM and podcasting at W2Media.ca.
So you've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio, on unceded Coast Salish territories, British Columbia, Canada. So Food Empowerment Project seeks to create a more just and sustainable world by recognizing the power of one's food choices. They encourage healthy food choices that reflect a more compassionate society by spotlighting the abuse of animals on farms, the depletion of natural resources, unfair working conditions for workers, and the unavailability of healthy foods in low-income areas. Food Empowerment Project works on animal and human rights and justice by highlighting the issues in our food system, from sourcing to production to accessibility issues, while promoting ethical veganism. An issue that is often not considered or not at the forefront of vegan advocacy and animal liberation activism is the severe oppression and exploitation that the workers, yes, as well as the animals, of slaughterhouses and animal agriculture experience. Today we have Lauren Ornelius, Food Empowerment Project's founder and activist of over 20 years, to speak with us about these issues. Hello, Lauren, and thank you for joining us.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
So first off, what are the working conditions like in slaughterhouses and agribusinesses? What hazards are workers exposed to on a daily basis?
Well, I think looking at all agricultural workers, whether it be for produce or for those who are killing animals, the conditions are pretty similar when you look at the long hours and the hard conditions that they're made to put through. When you look at slaughterhouse workers, you have in addition to the fact that they are being made to kill animals every day, and that's their job. And as we know, nobody thinks when I grow up, that's what I want to do for a living. So we're looking at corporations that put productivity and profit over the well-being of their health and the conditions in which they work in. They work, 18, 14 hours a day doing repetitive motions, cutting, which causes a lot of health problems for them. They're also killing animals who are going to struggle. In the case of cows and other large animals, they could be harmed by those animals. Again, I always feel like I have to clarify, You know, at the end of the day, the animals are being killed. And although it's not the intent of these industries to kill the workers, at times the workers themselves are often killed. And I just always want to highlight that, you know, obviously, you know, I've been vegan for over 26 years, and our organization is ethical and encourages people to go vegan. But there's no denying the trauma and abuse that workers are put through in slaughterhouses. That's why they have, you know, a turnover rate that exceeds 100% annually, you know, and the fact that these jobs that they're forced to perform are emotionally and physically taxing for them.
And what are the rates, the general rates of injuries and illness for workers?
I don't know how many statistics actually exist. If you know of some, Food Empowerment Project, what we try and do is we try and encourage people to recognize, you know, how they can make a difference in their food choices. And for veganism, we do this to encourage people to look at the perspective of the animal. We're always hesitant to really put a lot of time and energy into talking to vegans about slaughterhouse workers because there's abuse in the foods that we eat. And there's some inconsistencies when vegans try to talk to other people about going vegan for the workers when at the end of the day, most of them are interested in people going vegan for the sake of the animals. But there's no denying that there's some problems right now in the animal movement and how workers are viewed that we have become a little bit more vocal about this. So I'm not going to have statistics to spout out at you, but, you know, suffice it to say that, you know, the women who work in these facilities are victims of sexual abuse, sexual assault. Many times they're not being paid overtime. A lot of times they, you know, aren't being paid for the overtime that they're doing. They're not being paid living wages. One of the places that I visited, which was a processing facility, not a slaughterhouse, but where they cut the flesh of the animals up. And one of the signs they had up said that there would be a free barbecue at the end of the month if there were no worker injuries reported. And this is probably indicative of the entire industry where workers are encouraged not to report abuses. So that's why it's really hard sometimes to come up with good statistics on this stuff because many workers aren't going to complain about the conditions in which they're working in.
Okay, and working in such an environment of despair, forced to do horrific things, I can only imagine what this does to a person. How does it affect employees' mental and emotional well-being?
There's some reports that have been done about anybody who has, you know, been involved in some type of traumatic incident, like post-traumatic syndrome, whether it be people who come back from war or people who work in a slaughterhouse, where there are more instances of abuse and maybe substance abuse, physical abuse, and maybe they may be more prone to violence. Another offset of that is I think a lot of these workers don't then consume animals in which they're slaughtering every day.
And what is it that leads people to do this type of clearly undesirable work?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Oh, sure. I just said, what is it that tends to lead people to do this type of undesirable work?
Well, you know, a lot of people who go into work are poor. A majority are people of color. You have a lot, about 38% who are undocumented, which means that they are kind of more at the mercy of who they're working for. They are going to be less likely to complain. And these slaughterhouses actually will go to places such as Mexico and other areas in Latin America and try and recruit workers to come up. And so they come up by the busloads to work for these facilities. And if there's a raid on the facility and they're all terminated or deported, all the slaughterhouse does is hire another group of people. They aren't interested in, you know, keeping workers. Not that many people who do these types of jobs would continue to do it for a long amount of time. You have people who are poor and who aren't documented, who are stuck doing these types of jobs.
Hi, yeah, thanks for that point. And I just have a question then kind of regarding that is, because so often these workers are undocumented and also kind of treated as disposable and you get new workers every year, do you have any suggestions on any kind of like solidarity work that can be done between animal rights, animal liberation activists with like migrant justice activists who are working on these issues to, you know, maybe secure more like rights and I guess access to social, you know, goods in North America?
Yeah, it's a great question. And one of the things we've done, because it is kind of hard to figure out, like, how do we do this? How do we bridge this so we don't seem like a bunch of hypocrites out there when we know at the end of the day, for many of us, we want people eating animals to begin with. What we've done, we've recently started a SAVE chapter out where we're based called Sonoma County Chicken SAVE. And as part of the effort, we have whistleblower cards to hand out to the workers so that they can know what their rights are. And if they have any issues that they want to blow the whistle on, that they will be protected. So we have whistleblower cards available in English and Spanish to hand out to workers. We have found that, I wrote a blog about it recently, but not that long ago, there were some workers who complained about working conditions in a pig slaughterhouse, and these workers were from Mexico, and they're being treated much differently than the other workers who were white and who spoke English. And they were yelled at, they weren't given breaks, they weren't given bathroom breaks. And so the workers complained about these, the type of treatment they were receiving. But also at the same time, they took the opportunity to speak about how the animals were being treated as well. And so we see this as probably more common than you might think, but once the workers have the strength and the courage to speak out about their own abuses, they are going to also be willing to talk about some of the abuses they see taking place against non-human animals. So our take has kind of been, let's make sure that the workers know their rights, and when if they need to blow the whistle or they need to talk to somebody about how their rights are being violated, that they stand a good chance as well of talking about how the animals are being treated too.
And you mentioned earlier a high turnover and that these workers are disposable or seen as disposable to the slaughterhouse facilities. How does this affect a person, especially, you know, migrant workers from, like, once they're laid off from this type of a position and their families?
I'm not sure. I mean, I would imagine emotionally it's very challenging. These people will be traveling thousands of miles away from their homes, homes that they don't want to leave, homes that because of the, you know, systems such as NAFTA and other, you know, things such as that have impacted their livelihoods in their home countries. They come to the United States thinking that they're going to have, live a better life and they're going to be protected, and they come here, and if they get laid off from one of these positions, I imagine they're going to be scared and incredibly in debt. Sometimes they pay people to help bring them over. And they're probably going to be more susceptible to other types of abuses that can happen to workers, and especially women in this country.
And so in this industry, you know, it's full of multi-tiered oppression in the sense of the animals, of course, being oppressed by the system and the workers who are similarly oppressed by the entire system. Is this the aim of the industry to keep workers in a state where they have no options and suffer immensely, or rather just a result of a corrupt society, or possibly both?
Well, unfortunately, I think it's kind of across the board. I think that many of these corporations, whether they be having slaughterhouse workers, produce workers, restaurant workers, fast food workers, Walmart workers, are kind of all in a system where they are in a good position if they continue to treat the workers badly, they don't pay them living wages, they don't give them benefits, and they create a cycle of poverty where these people are going to always be victimized by a system and by people who are profiting off of them. And, you know, the slaughterhouse industry is no different in that regard. They just have more beings in which they're abusing.
And undercover groups such as Mercy for Animals, Compassion Over Killing, amongst others, often release videos of slaughterhouse workers abusing animals in horrific ways. Are the workers often encouraged to perform sadistic behavior by management of the facilities, or is this a product of the environment, a cycle of abuse, perhaps?
Well, I'm not really sure. What I do know is that sometimes some of these practices that are being exposed are kind of industry practices, obviously not all of them. But we do know that slamming baby piglets against cement is an industry practice. If a worker is seen doing that, that is because they are told that is how they handle the situation. That is how they handle piglets who are, you know, suffering or that they need to get rid of. So some of this is indeed the way in which management is telling them how to do it. Slaughterhouse workers are told to keep the line fast, not to let the line stop. And if they need to keep these animals moving, they're probably told to do whatever it is to keep that line from stopping. So some of it is directly coming to management, and they're the ones who need to be held accountable. The entire system needs to be held accountable. That's not to say that workers who are exhausted, who are being paid very little, who are having no protections for their own health, might not be upset at times and might not feel panicked and might not feel in these ways in which they act, you know, inhumanely. But the system overall is not created by them. The system is created by those at the top.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point that you brought up, too. Like, when we see these videos and then whatever the company is, you know, blaming these individual workers when they are, in fact, the victims as well as of the system. And I also wanted to ask, too, these videos, when they're released, often just incite rage in people viewing them, you know, understandably so, but the target of the rage tends to be the workers. I see many comments on YouTube and Facebook, such as, I would like to see those people, you know, experience whatever kind of abuse the animal is experiencing in the video and similar. What would you say to these people?
First of all, my initial reaction is always not to get into a conversation with them, because we get a lot of hateful email from vegans who do not like that we talk about slaughterhouse workers. And, you know, I've seen some of these comments before where people say things such as they should just go home, which, of course, is very racist. And, you know, for someone like me whose family's been here for over 11 generations on my mom's side, this was our home before other people took it over. So, you know, those comments are ignorant. But I don't know, honestly. Some people I do think can understand. You know, it's a matter of reminding them that the system that we all have a problem with, the corporations who are making the money off the deaths of these animals, are the same ones exploiting these workers. And I think as much as we can make that connection, that is the hope, is to remind them that it's all the same problem. These are the same corporations. Not only are they, you know, killing animals, exploiting workers, they're also creating ill health in communities of color around the country. But people who are just hateful and racist, I think it's really hard to continue to reason with those people. And frankly, I can't stomach it sometimes.
Yeah. And the groups exposing these undercover videos often, you know, take part in pressing charges against the individual workers and then basically celebrating the convictions. What are the major problems with this system and promotion of the prison industrial complex?
Well, I think that there are a lot of problems with that. One is that they're not looking at the bigger problem. And if they're trying to create change in the system, if they're trying to create a situation where these types of egregious abuses aren't taking place in slaughterhouses, then they need to be working as well on the systems that run the slaughterhouse. They need to be, and trust me, I know that's a huge nut to crack. I mean, but these corporations are the ones who are asking for the speed lines to be so fast. They need to be looking at, you know, convicting the owners of these slaughterhouses, the owners of the factory farms. And what I mean by owners is also those corporations that own these. They're the ones who should be held accountable, and they're the ones who should be forced to make these changes, because that's where the change is going to occur. These workers aren't so scared that if they can't slow down any line, then they're going to be carrying out these types of abuses. So I think that's one inherent problem, is they're not really looking at solving the problem. This is just a Band-Aid way of getting attention and, again, blaming the victim. It also serves to where, and people who know way more about the prison industrial complex than I do can speak to this much better than I do, but there is that problem again about we're going to be, you know, adding more to the prison system, a system that's already unjust, a system that already imprisons majority of people of color. to forms of environmental racism where you have the majority of people of color who are in prison. And that's going to be no different when we're putting these types of people in prison as well, these workers in prison. And you can have somebody talking about the prison industry and the problems with that, but I just know that that inherently is not a great system either. It's not about rehabilitating anybody, and I don't even know how you'd really rehabilitate a worker who's just doing what he's told to do.
Yeah, you brought up so many good points. I'm glad I asked that question. Yeah, just it seems like this is a problem for so many reasons, and also like, even if all you care about is the animals, this doesn't challenge the system, but rather, it's blaming individual workers who are also exploited. All right. And Darren kind of mentioned a bit earlier, ways that of showing solidarity work. What are some ways that at the very least in our, animal activism outreach, we can also kind of provide, some information about what's going on in these facilities without, co-opting them?
Yeah, I mean, that's the tricky thing, right, is that we don't want to co-opt an issue. I mean, I will mention that somebody posted about a zine called Disposable Bodies that really talks about the slaughterhouse workers, which was just brought to my attention that I personally would like to read more about, but maybe us becoming more familiar with these issues and what they really go through. There's also a book, although it's several years old, called Slaughterhouse by Gail Eisnitz, which is a superb but very difficult to read book about slaughterhouses covering both human and non-human animals. But I do always have concerns about co-opting other people's movements. Food Empowerment Project, like I was explaining before, if we were to advocate for slaughterhouse workers and say we want the line slowed down, or we want higher pay for slaughterhouse workers, and that's what we went out and we campaigned for, to be a little bit hypocritical, because at the end of the day, we don't want slaughterhouses to exist. And we want to be able to advocate for slaughterhouse workers in terms of talking about what they go through, but we can't really pretend as if that's the reason why we want people to go vegan. It is an additional benefit to people going vegan, not harming the animals and not harming these workers. But I think it would go a long way for us to acknowledge as well the ways that our food that we eat impacts workers as well. So we don't look like a bunch of hypocrites acting like slaughterhouse workers are the only ones being impacted, the only workers being impacted in food production. We have farm workers who pick plant-based foods who are treated unjustly on a regular basis, where you have farm workers in Immokalee, Florida, who are just trying to earn a penny more per pound for the tomatoes that they pick. That's all they're asking for. So I think in terms of solidarity, we need to take a look at our own food supply and show others that we're willing to be critical about the foods that we eat as well.
Thanks so much, Lauren. I think it's great for us to always kind of be self-critical and look at ourselves to better ourselves as activists. So thanks for joining us today. That was such an awesome interview, and I was glad that we got to cover this really important issue. So that was Lauren Ornelas.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. That was Lauren Ornelas from Food Empowerment Project. To learn more about the ways our food choices affect both humans and animals and how to work for towards a more just world, check out foodispower.org.
You are listening to the Animal Voices show on 100.5 FM, and I have some news for you. So if you were listening to the show a couple of weeks ago, you would have heard the interview that we did about the horse-drawn carriage industry in Victoria, BC, where that industry exists. And I know, Darren, you know a little bit about that, right? Because we were talking about a protest that was going to be happening the next day, and you were to attend that. Anyways, activists there in Victoria are calling for an end to the horse-drawn carriage industry. And animal activists in New York City have also been doing the same thing there for a few decades, actually. And now the process to have the carriages banned in New York may be starting as early as next week. So in case you didn't know, for more than a century, horse-drawn carriages have been a fixture of New York City, and I happened to see them there myself, actually, when I was there. I've been there twice now, so they're definitely still around there. However, next week, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio could introduce a bill that would ban the industry by 2016, thereby fulfilling a campaign promise to animal rights activists. He said, "We think it's time to end the horse carriages in the city, and we're going to act on it." And it's a move animal animal rights activists say they've waited decades for. The legislation is expected to lay out several steps, including not renewing operating licenses. So instead, hundreds of carriage drivers would be offered job training classes and will be eligible to get a medallion for green taxis, which can only pick up passengers in certain areas. However, the carriage drivers said they aren't looking to change careers and insist their animals are well cared for. One horse-drawn carriage driver said the green taxis to replace something that's been here for 158 years with another so-called business that's been here for 18 months is equally an outrage. And I kind of wonder what the outrage is about that. Anyways, these drivers got support from actor Liam Neeson. I don't know if you heard about that. That was earlier this year. He paid a visit to the stable in March. He said, "I'm here in support of my brothers and sisters, in support of the horse carriage industry, and a beautiful industry it is." However, we know it not to be a beautiful industry. Allie Feldman, an animal rights activist in New York, said, "We've had horses collapse on city streets. We've had horses die on city streets. Horses have been hit by taxis. Horses have gotten spooked and run into the middle of the road." Once introduced, the bill would still need majority support from city council. So that news is to be continued, and hopefully you'll hear about it here on Animal Voices when we have more news on that. And if this proposal does become law, it's also expected to include a retirement plan for the horses, making sure that they end up somewhere safe. So yeah, I really hope that, you know, it's been a long time coming. I've been following the news about this industry, and I've talked about it several times before on the show. Here that I wanted to cover this issue on the show, and we did finally 2 weeks ago because it was right here home in Victoria, BC, and now probably one of the biggest places that it's happening in is going to be shut down. But Darren, you were saying as of 4 days ago, there's also horse-drawn carriage industry in Salt Lake City that's being banned. Is that right?
Yeah, I just came across this piece of news on Facebook sometime earlier this week, and basically a horse-drawn carriage company in Salt Lake City in Utah, where basically after a law has been passed and they decided, yeah, they're not going to operate anymore, and the entire industry has been banned in that city. So there's a lot of momentum on this issue right now, I think, especially in the United States. And I think it'll be interesting to see what would happen to horse-drawn carriages in smaller cities like Victoria and Vancouver, how those industries are going to react as bigger cities start to phase that practice out.
Animal liberation is coming for all, step by step and city by city. So one more very quick story here. I'll just make this really brief. In case you didn't hear, the H5 avian influenza virus has been detected on two poultry farms in the Fraser Valley. That's here in the Lower Mainland. And as of this Wednesday, two more farms have been put under quarantine, although it hasn't been made clear yet if those farms have been infected. The outbreak began at a turkey farm in Abbotsford and a chicken farm in Chilliwack, which were quarantined earlier this week after the birds at both sites tested positive for the virus. So unfortunately, about 6,500 of the 18,000 birds from the first two turkey farms have already died from the disease as of earlier this week, and the rest were set to be euthanized by gassing the barns with carbon monoxide. And these turkeys were 83 days old and being raised for sale at Christmas.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio on unceded Coast Salish territories in BC, Canada. Please join us next week on Friday, December 12th, for another great show. We here on Animal Voices want you to stay connected with us online. You can reach us at animalvoices.org, where you can stream shows from our archive or download as podcasts. You can read our show blogs with detailed links, and you could subscribe via iTunes to our podcast as well, and also learn about upcoming events. You can also stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. Please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We're closing the show with a song by Consolidated called Unity of Oppression. Stay tuned for Radio Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
history of oppression. You know, we can't erase it in a pot of song, but the facts, we gotta face it. Men rape women and man rapes the environment, and people with opposed religious views are violent. How can we advance with a memory so short? We live in a society that kills animals for sport. And how can we discuss gender, class, or race when we can't respect the rights of lesbians and gays?
Racism, homophobia, xenophobia. We must destroy the myths once and for all, shatter them. We must continue to speak out.
In our efforts to make a difference, we specialize. When the contradiction arises, we fail to realize the damage is done to the Native American. These singular issues I just can't understand. How you can love one and have hatred for another. You torture your sisters while saying peace to your brothers. As long as we insist on being so aggressive, we will continue to play the role of the oppressor. When men and women, straight and gay, whites and non-whites begin to unite. When humans can treat non-human species with fairness and dignity, then, only then, is there unity. To all the white liberals and non-white militants that oversimplify the impact of prejudice, blame it on the whites and you're right, but accuse us divided, that agenda becomes short-sighted. I hear you condemning all racist sentiments, and then I hear you making anti-Semitic comments. Instead of only allowing one type of equality, place the blame on each other, yet we should be expanding our scope of understanding and hope. Just posing some questions and make some suggestions. We don't claim to speak from a position of authority, we only want one thing. And that's unity.
We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the world? We are all fighting over the cause. What's the end of the